Hey, I am so glad to be here this morning. I was not planning to speak this week. I was taking a bit of a breather, and I get a message on Thursday afternoon. Sammy, who was going to be with us, he pulled his back out, and he has not been able to walk. So I am up, and here's what I did. So Friday morning, I went to my office. I pulled out my old hard drive with all my old sermons from the very beginning, and I started looking through, okay, what to speak on this Sunday? What should we choose? Now, luckily, I have a whole archive of material that's really helpful. And there were a few sermons that I pulled out, I printed out, put on my desk, and just started sifting through them a little bit to figure out, okay, which one do I want to do? One jumped out at me. I put it to the side, and I had a couple of things Friday, didn't look at it again. So Saturday morning, which I never work on a Saturday morning, I never work on a sermon, because the sermon should be done before so that it can keep marinating in your soul before you get up to speak it on a Sunday. Any pastor that puts together a sermon on a Saturday afternoon, in my book, that's a big no-no. Sorry. Obviously, things come up, but I've learned my sermons are much better when I finish them out by Wednesday. Anyway, Saturday morning, I'm there. There was a sermon that flashing lights on Friday, flashing lights again on Saturday, but I said, I don't really want to preach this message right now because I felt like it needed some more work. I need to do a little more research into it. I said, I don't want to do that right now on a Saturday. I put that one to the side. I pulled out two other ones, started working through them. It just didn't feel right. The other sermon with the flashing lights, it kept calling out to me. Here is what you need to speak on. I said, okay, I'll answer the call of the sermon. Here we are, and this is a very basic, simple message, but as I sat with it, wasn't expecting that one at all. I don't know, maybe this is a message that some of us need to hear this morning. And again, it in my mind, it's really, really simple, and sometimes I steer away from simple messages because I like to be a little more complex, but I've also realized that simple sometimes is better, and simple is what we need. Today is a message that the truth of it is something that you probably all know. You've probably all heard multiple sermons on it before. Maybe it's just a reminder for you, but I strongly believe, because there's no way I could just put this one back in the drawer. I strongly believe that this is a sermon that we need to hear this morning. And I have titled this one, I think the same title I had back in 2014 or 2015, whenever I gave this one, The Widow and the Judge. Anyone remember this one? I think it was back in 2015. Most of you were not there in 2015. This is based on a parable of Jesus. Now, quick primer on parables. Parables are a teaching technique. And this teaching technique uses common, everyday ideas, items, people, places. And then the parable basically turns the common belief upside down. So Jesus would teach in parables. He would use an illustration that everyone would understand, but then he would take the illustration in a way in which everyone would be left wondering, what in the world is he talking about? We all know this isn't how it works. We all know the world doesn't work this way. God doesn't work this way. Our culture doesn't work this way. Jesus, essentially, whenever he offered a parable, was pulling the rug out from under people, and it left people spinning, thinking, what in the heck? Like, what is this guy talking about? Now, parable, it can be translated as alongside because, again, Jesus would use a common everyday illustration and then place it alongside something that was unfamiliar or something that was odd, something that seemed off, in order to teach a truth about what God is like. That was the purpose of a parable. Jesus wanted to teach about the kingdom of God. What is God like? And this is a question that humanity has been asking since the very, very beginning. That's why we're here this morning. We are still here trying to figure out what exactly is God like? What does God desire from us? How do we grow in our relationship in knowing more about this God that we place our trust and our belief in? And parables were not easily understood, which is why at the end of a parable, you are probably left scratching your head. The original listeners, they would have walked away very disoriented, because Jesus turned it all upside down for them. But the beauty about a parable is a parable isn't just a teaching that you take and then you go and remember, okay, parable is this, and you have some ideas and you have some facts. But rather, a parable was unsettling because it was an invitation into the teaching. It was an invitation to embody these truths that Jesus was talking about. Now, today we're going to look at a parable about, anyone want to guess from the title? A parable about who? Widow and a judge. Great. All right, we're all on the same page here this morning. This is going to be in Luke chapter 18. Then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. This is Luke. This is his interpretation of what is about to come in the parable. Here's how the parable begins. Jesus said, "In a certain town, there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared what people thought." Does this sound like a good judge? The answer is no. "And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to this judge with the plea, 'Grant me justice against my adversary.' There is a widow in this town. She has suffered some harm, some form of injustice. She continues to go to this judge, this unjust judge who doesn't care about God, doesn't care about people, because she's saying, 'Please grant me my plea. Do something about my situation. Please have kindness, have mercy, enact justice, because some harm has come to me. Someone in some way has hurt me.' Now, for some time, this judge refused. But finally, he said to himself, 'Even though I don't fear God, even though I don't care what people think, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, because of this reason alone, I will see that she gets justice.' Why? So that she won't eventually come and attack me." I mean, these parables are funny. It's okay. We can laugh when we read a story from the Bible. I know sometimes we think it would be really somber. Read the Bible. No. Jesus is a great storyteller, and he really gets to our hearts. He gets to the emotion behind it. This is a funny parable. She keeps bothering me, and so because she keeps bothering me, I'm going to give in to her. No other reason but the fact that she just keeps coming to me. This is how it often goes with my kids. Can I watch TV? No. Can I watch TV? No. Hey, can we watch TV now? For the third time, no. 5 minutes later, can you watch TV? All right, fine. Other parents, you know exactly what I'm talking about. They wear you down. This widow has worn the judge down. The Lord said, "Listen to what the unjust judge says, and will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice, and quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth?" Now, like every single parable that you read in the Bible, this parable raises all sorts of questions for us. Again, not easily understood. We have to sit with it a while. We need to reflect on it. We need to enter into the story in order to understand exactly what is happening. Three questions. First, is the judge the God figure? Because normally in these parables that Jesus tells, there is a God figure in the parable. But does this judge sound like God? This judge who doesn't fear God? This judge who's pretty calloused? He doesn't care what other people think of him. I mean, is this what Jesus is talking about? Is the judge being compared to God? Is Jesus saying here, does God care nothing for justice or for others? Second question, Well, what do we make of the judge's fear of the widow? Think about this. Even though I don't fear God or care what other people think, because this widow keeps bothering me. Now, bothering me is quite a tame translation of the Greek. Let me show you. Bothering, some translations have, because this widow keeps exhausting me. Here's the Greek word, hupiazo. Hupiazo. Now, what does this word mean? It's a boxing term. To strike under the eye. Bothering me, exhausting me, pretty tame. Because this widow essentially keeps striking me under my eye, because she keeps giving me a black eye. I had one, now I have two. This one just went away, and then she came back for more. I mean, the judge, what Jesus is saying here is, this widow, she's tenacious, frisky. She's not afraid to use her strength, to use some violence in order to get what she wants. I mean, this parable just gets odder and odder because she keeps striking me under the eye, and then he's even more afraid that she's going to attack him. Like, whoa, she might do worse than just punch me in the eye. So the question is, what do we make of the judge's fear of the widow? This is an odd detail in the story. And then here is the third question, and this is a really important question, I think. How does the widow respond to receiving what she has asked for? Think about this. The widow keeps coming back day after day. We're not told how long, maybe a couple of weeks, a couple of months, a couple of years possibly. I mean, that's the beauty about this right here. We really have, there's no time frame. We don't know how long this widow has been pleading for justice. We don't know how many black eyes she's given the judge. Once she finally receives the justice that she is asking for, how does she respond? Another way of asking this question, what has her long suffering taught her? I think this is a question that we can all relate to. We've all experienced moments of long suffering. Moments of asking, pleading, praying. There's no response. How do you respond when eventually, and it doesn't always happen, but when you ask and ask and ask and you finally get that which you're praying or asking for, how do we respond? Where Jesus doesn't tell us anything here in the parable about what the widow does next after she receives justice. Does she continue seeking vengeance against her adversary? Someone has hurt her. She has an adversary. That's why she's going to the judge. Does she try to get even with him? Does she try to get even more revenge after she receives fair justice? Or does she offer forgiveness at this point? I mean, these are deep questions that I think are important for all of us. How do we respond when we receive that which we have asked for? Does she respond with gratitude? Oh, thank you, judge. And then she goes and lives a life of gratitude and thankfulness. Or does she respond with entitlement? Oh, I finally got what I deserved. That nasty judge, he gave me just that which I deserved. And there's really no space for gratitude in her heart at that point. So the third question, how does the widow respond to receiving what she has asked for? What comes next in the parable? See, sometimes we read into the Bible these stories, we memorize them, but we're meant to internalize them and then take the next step. These are the sorts of questions we ask when we read a story like this. What comes next? And then what would we do in such a situation? Now, here's Luke's interpretation of this parable. Right in the beginning, before Jesus offers this parable, Luke says, well, Jesus taught this to teach his disciples to always pray and to never give up. And then after the parable, Luke says, there's this question here that Jesus asks, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? Will Jesus find faith amongst the people on the earth? For Luke, his entire book, his gospel, one of the major themes in the gospel is faith. Is Luke concerned that some of the disciples are falling away from their faith in Jesus? Is Luke worried that the faith that is being exhibited by some disciples of Jesus is a bit skewed, a bit off? And Luke's trying to use this parable, this teaching of Jesus, in a way to bring people back to the center, back to a true understanding of faith. Now, let me give you two examples in the book of Luke to show you how Luke talks about faith. Luke chapter 5, and both these stories, again, simple message, both these stories are stories that you have probably heard before. Luke chapter 5, starting in verse 17. One day, Jesus was teaching. Pharisees and teachers of the law were sitting there. They had come from every village of Galilee, from Judea and Jerusalem, and the power of the Lord was with Jesus, healing the sick. Some men came carrying a paralyzed man on a mat because word of Jesus was going around. He was healing. The Spirit was working through him. People were coming to Jesus. They were listening to his teachings. Their lives were being transformed. Their lives were being changed. They were given a true picture of what God is like. They were receiving healing, and more people kept coming to listen to Jesus because they wanted that which Jesus was offering. And so some men came carrying a paralyzed man on a mat, and they tried to take him into the house to lay him before Jesus, thinking if we could just get our friend to Jesus, he might be able to walk again. Now, they couldn't find a way to do this because of the crowd. So many people were there. So they gave up and went home. So they went up on the roof and they lowered their friend on his mat through the tiles into the middle of the crowd. Little Mission Impossible here. You know Mission Impossible 1, Tom Cruise is coming down, the sweat drips off, right? He doesn't want to set off those laser beams. I think maybe this is where they got that idea from. The friends, instead of giving up and going home, they climb to the top of the, they're creative as anything, but they're desperate. And they love their friend. And they've seen his pain. They've seen what he has gone through day after day, and they think, if we could just find a way to get him in front of Jesus, his life would be changed. So they go up on the roof. They take away a tile. They lower him, Mission Impossible style, on a mat, right in the middle of the crowd, right in front of Jesus. When Jesus saw their faith, notice, whose faith? Their collective faith. The faith of the friends. Jesus said, friend, your sins are forgiven. Healing, forgiveness of sins were connected. So what is it that Jesus saw in their faith? How about some of these? Persistence. Dedication. Not giving up when it seemed hopeless and futile. Or what about this one? Movement in a direction. They had the faith, and then they actively went and lived it out. They didn't hold the faith up here in their heads, but their lives together moved in a particular direction that supported the faith that they held in their heart, in their soul, in their head, wherever it might have been in their body somewhere. They put their body to work, embodying the faith that they held. This was an active faith. We could say it this way. Faith is actively using the resources in front of you to move God to action. This is exactly what is happening in the story. The friends were mobile. They could move around. They could carry their friend on the mat. When they saw they weren't going to get through the front door, they used their minds, their strength, their creativity. They kept moving. They didn't just stay stationary. They didn't remain passive. They didn't sit there in front of the house praying that God would do something. But they kept moving. They were active in their faith. Here's another way of saying it. Faith is less of a passive belief system and more about living in a way that lines up with the hope of who you believe God to be. Go back to the widow and the judge. The judge was non-responsive. I don't care. Someone get her out of my face. But the widow's faith, her tenacity, the action, the movement, that is what eventually moved the judge to act. It was her not giving up, but continuing to go to the judge with that right hook. Let's look at another story in Luke. Luke chapter 8, verse 42. As Jesus was on his way, I love this one. It was like a giant mosh pit. The crowds almost crushed him. So many people swarming in. And a woman who was there, who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. Think about this. She had been sick for 12 years. Subject to bleeding, she was an outcast. She wasn't able to be a part of the community. So for 12 years, she was told, you can't be a part of our group. 12 long years. Think about how she felt every night going to sleep. And we're told no one for 12 years had been able to heal her. She came up behind Jesus, touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. Who touched me? Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, Jesus, come on. The people are crowding. They're pressing against you. No one intentionally touched your cloak. I mean, come on. Everyone's just bumping up against each other because there's no room here. We're all crowded in. But Jesus said, No. I know someone touched me because I could feel that healing power, the power of the Spirit, has gone out from me. Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, she came trembling and fell at Jesus' feet. In the presence of all the people, everyone was there listening. Most of the people, good chance they would have known who she was. Oh, there's the woman who's been an outcast for 12 years. There's a woman who's been sick. In the presence of all the people there, she told why she had touched Jesus and how she had been instantly healed. What did Jesus say to her? Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. What type of faith did this woman have? A faith of boldness, desperation. Here's this word again, persistence, not giving up. 12 years, no one had been able to heal her, yet she didn't give up. She kept moving. Again, it's not that passive belief system. She kept doing everything in her power in order to enact God to move. So it was an active faith. Again, just like what we saw with the friends and the paralyzed man. Her faith, it wasn't based on the voice of others. And sometimes this happens where we live out someone else's faith. Someone tells us that's impossible. God doesn't work that way. You'll never find that which you're looking for. And our faith gets crushed a bit because we have it, but then we listen to what others are saying and we allow that faith, that spark that we have within us, trust for who we believe God to be, we allow that to get squashed a bit because of the unbelief of others. This was a faith where she had trust for who she believed Jesus was, a healer, a conduit of God's power. This woman had the belief, had the faith that tomorrow can be different than today. Tomorrow doesn't need to be like that Tom Cruise movie. What's it? And they changed the name, Edge of Tomorrow. Was it End, Repeat, Start Again, or something like that? They're making a sequel. He's probably going to do some running in it. It was this faith. Actually, so I met someone at the solar eclipse. We went out, took Reese. I ended up meeting someone who is the head of stunt teams for different movies. I asked him, hey, what'd you work on recently that I might recognize? Like, oh, I did the set for Barbie. Like, oh, all right, cool. He works for Warner Brothers. And I said, oh, wow, I heard Tom Cruise just signed a new deal with Warner Brothers. Are you going to be working with him? He said, yeah, but he's not really looking forward to it because he's someone who always wants stunt doubles. And so he's afraid because Tom Cruise never wants stunt doubles, wants to do his own stunt doubles or wants to do his own stunts. Anyway, I don't know how we got there. But this faith was this belief that life doesn't have to continue this way. Something can change. Now, let's go back to the widow and judge for a moment. The widow, as we're told, she feels that she has been treated unfairly. And this is really important. She feels as if she has been treated unfairly by everyone, and I would argue by God included. You ever find yourself there? You feel like you're in your situation, you've kind of been given the shaft. And you feel as if everyone has been treating you unfairly, and you've prayed about it. You've asked God to change your situation, and it's radio silence. You ever been there before? I would argue that this is how the widow is feeling. And so maybe there's a component in this parable where God feels like the judge at certain times, where it feels like God is removed from your situation. It feels as if God cares nothing for justice. Sometimes we look at the news and you hear about what's going on in the world. We hear about these missiles that were launched last night, and you're, God, can't you come and do something about this situation? Do you not care for justice, for peace, for life? Sometimes God can feel like that judge, if we're being honest, where it feels as if God doesn't seem merciful at times, or God doesn't care for justice. See, here's the widow in the story. Remember that boxing term? Think about it. Anyone ever boxed before? Whoa, okay, nice. You ever been here in the corner of a ring? If you watch the Rocky movies, if you watch the boxing, any boxing movie, I once went to a boxing match, sometimes you feel a bit overpowered. Think about this strong, mighty judge who holds a lot of power, authority, influence, and then a widow. I mean, the picture that we're given here, it's as if he would be the one pushing the widow into the corner. And she's exhausted. She's tired. Here's another picture. It almost feels like this is what would happen if the widow and the judge went into a ring together. The one throwing the punch would be the judge. The one taking the punch would be the widow. And if we think about it, in your situations, in your experiences, when there's something that you have been praying for, something that you've been hoping for, something that you've been believing is true about God, but when you don't see that coming to fruition, you ever feel like you're here in the corner of the ring? You ever feel like you're just getting thrown the right hook by life? And yet, what does the widow do? Does she stay down? Does she stay in the corner? The widow doesn't stay on the ground. The widow gets up and keeps going. She returns to the judge. She goes home, wiped out, emotionally wrecked, but the next day, she's back there again. Faith, I think, according to Luke, is the power to keep going when you don't find the relief or the answer that you're looking for. Here's the thing about this parable. I wish that I could tell you that what this parable teaches is that every single prayer that you ask will be answered. I wish I could tell you that this parable says that every time that you plead before God to change your situation, to heal something in your life, to remove what you're going through, I wish I could tell you that immediately with the snap of a finger, God would answer that prayer and you'd find the relief and the healing that you seek. But that's not what this parable says. We talked about this earlier, but this parable gives no time frame. Was the widow granted her request on the last day of her life? Had she been going in front of the judge 15, 20, 30 years and didn't receive the justice that she was looking for? What this parable, according to Luke and some of the larger themes in the book of Luke, it teaches us that faith, the faith that Jesus is looking to produce within us, is a faith that has strength to get up off the mat when you've been knocked down. Faith with the courage to not stay down and to give up and to stay in the corner, but the courage to stand back in the ring and to keep going, even when you've been knocked down 15, 20, 25 times. I'll go back to this one again. At the end, after the paralyzed man had been healed, or after he had been brought down in front of Jesus, Jesus saw their faith. Why do we do what we do on a Sunday morning? Why do we gather Wednesdays for community group at Debbie's house? Because sometimes our faith is lacking. And on our own, we can't get up. On our own, we have no strength left. Maybe we have no desire left. Because, man, if you're going in front of that judge, if you're pleading to God, it gets tiring. And that spark, that desire, that belief, the trust that you have that God can actually do something, it begins to dwindle the more you don't see that which you're asking for. Church exists because we need each other's faith. We need the faith of the person that you're sitting next to right now, the person that's sitting behind you. Because this walk of following Jesus was never intended to simply be between you and Jesus. It's a part of it, of course. There's an individual aspect of it, yes. But it's about us collectively, together, getting up. And sometimes you're like the paralyzed man, and you need your friends. You need the faith of others to put you on that mat, to bring you to the top of the roof and to lower you down in front of Jesus because you don't have the strength. And if you're here this morning and that's you, this parable, this story says it's okay. If your faith is lacking, if it's dwindling, if it's been harmed and squashed, you're okay. Because sometimes we beat ourselves up over it. And we think, why can't I have the faith that I used to have? Why doesn't my relationship with Jesus feel like it felt 5, 10 years ago? And we beat ourselves up. And there's all these messages that tell us, well, the problem is you. You're just not praying enough. You're not reading your Bible enough. You're not going to church enough. But what we hear in this story is maybe you just need to be around some friends a little bit more. And the faith that's missing, well, maybe some of the power that came from Jesus, the power of the Spirit that we carry within us, maybe some of that power will be transferred to you as you get around others and their faith and allow yourself to be carried. Again, I have no idea why this sermon was screaming out to me, but I just couldn't set it to the side. It's so simple. But if there's anything that you remember from this morning, if there's one thing that I could tell you here, it's to keep going. To keep going. To keep moving in the direction of who you believe God to be. And get yourself around others, like what you're doing here right now. Because we need the faith of each other to help us keep going.